Well, good afternoon. This is Jeff. Welcome to Sundays with Papa Jeff. If you're a first-time listener, this show is about the mystic path, and it's for and about travelers, seekers, and finders on the mystic path. And last week, I started to read a book, Sunrise from Two Lions, to kind of put it in the archives as an audio book. However, I had the great good fortune to run across Chris Fenwick by phone, and she agreed to come on the show as a guest, and I really didn't want to wait at all. I just finished her incredibly captivating book called The 100th Human. It's a fiction novel. And Chris is on the line here with us in the studio by electronic means. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I'd like to just tell our listeners, first of all, a little bit about the book, where they can find the book. Actually, I'll want to let you do that because you know that better than I.
Okay, The 100th Human, it is available at Amazon.com. It also is available through Borders Bookstore, so you can order it, or you can order it through Sunbury Press online, which is the press that published it.
Okay, and that's Sunbury Press.com.
Correct.
You can order it directly. Can we order it from your website as well, Chris?
Yes. Well, The 100th Human website will give you a link to the Sunbury Press to order it, yes.
All right. Well, I want to tell our listeners that it's definitely worthwhile, certainly to get the book, but tuning into the website is awesome. It's really well done. Everything about it, the graphics, the animation, the whole flow of it, the navigation of it, just beautifully done. And you'll find that at the100human.com, and that's the100human.com. Would you start by just giving us a little synopsis? Oh, I know when I saw the title, I immediately, the 100th monkey phenomenon that I was familiar with came to mind. You might start by just telling us a little bit about that and how that became the metaphor, if you will, for the book.
Sure. The book is about reaching a critical mass in consciousness in the not so distant future. Of course, the best example I could find for that was the 100th monkey phenomenon, which I explained in the very beginning of the book, happened some time ago. Some scientists were studying monkeys in the islands of Japan, and in order to get the monkeys out to observe them, they threw sweet potatoes down, and after a while, some of the monkeys started to dip the sweet potatoes in the surf to wash off the sand. They didn't like it gritty. Before long, the whole family of monkeys were doing that. And it's unknown the amount of time that it happened, but at some point, all of the monkeys on the island were doing the same thing. And then at another point, not too long after that, all of the monkeys observed on all of the islands were doing that. So the phenomenon is that at certain point, the whole monkey mind understood the behavior and were able to access that. So this is a turn on that where it's the 100th human, where we reach a critical mass in human consciousness, and the whole human mind has access to the new behavior.
Now, I remember reading about the 100th monkey, and I'm sure it's told in slightly different versions through a lot of different time, Chris. That they were studying on different islands. And that the 100th monkey, whether that's the finite number or not, of course, isn't really the issue. But that at a certain point when the culture changed, when the monkey mind, and using it a little differently than it's used in some traditions, when the 100th monkey, adopted the behavior, that not only the entire family or the colony on one island adopted that behavior, but monkeys on other islands who hadn't seen the behavior changed their behavior.
So right.
It was that leap in consciousness.
Exactly. Okay. And, of course, you know, the 100th, that's just an arbitrary number stating at some point it reached some type of critical mass.
Yeah. It makes it for a nice story by rounding it off to 100. So it's,
yes, it does, doesn't it?
Now, Chris, as I read the book, and, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with BBS Radio, but if you've spent any time on the website, there are 70 of us who are hosts on the show, mm-hmm. and virtually everything in the show is about that transformation in consciousness.
Right.
So there seems to be a growing of that approach to critical mass, if you will, And I know that many spiritual teachers in the past, that's what they speak of. You know, Yogananda spoke of it at one point. Self-realization will spread like a wildfire. And, and Rajneesh, or later Osho, spoke often about the new man, the transformation, that there would come a time when that would just sweep. And so many others, and certainly Christ came, that everyone would be saved, and so on and on and on. What was the critical mass? What was the critical moment that captured you? And I see you use the word captivated, and I understand that captivated you and tied you down, if you will, and said, write this book. Was there a moment that you can pin down? Was it a gradual sort of growing as you learned about these things?
Well, I had learned, I have been learning for 20 years. And I say to people that I wrote the 8 keys in the book, the 8 keys to a shift in consciousness that are in the book, are the things that I'm learning. I don't pretend to be an expert, but I still go back and read those key chapters and learn something new every time. And I wrote it. I just think that they are, very beneficial and enlightening. But the key to, pardon the pun, key to writing the book, I think it was a build up over the years, and I had been raised as by Baptist missionaries, a very different type of upbringing, and of course that their critical mass is the second coming of Christ, and I no longer adhere to that same doctrine, but I started to recognize, like you said, it in a lot of different religions and philosophies, this point in the future where mankind makes a jump in consciousness and evolves to a certain point or jumps. A lot of those were more apocalyptic, especially in the movies and in storylines today. Seems very cataclysmic.
Yeah.
Polar shifts and ice ages and all of those types of apocalyptic scenarios. And that seems very victimization to me. I didn't like the idea of something could happen outside of my, not control, but input. So I wanted to present an idea and put into mass consciousness in the book something much more positive and something where we had a choice in how that shift happened. So that's, and that just, actually, I started writing the book the day my third child was born. About 21 months ago.
Okay.
That was kind of just when he was born, I knew I needed to write it, and I actually didn't stop until it was done. I was compelled.
Yeah, a daily. It's interesting. So many people I've had on the show and I've talked to, and different writers, and in writing my books, it becomes like a choiceless obligation, doesn't it, Chris? You just, boom, I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wrote till 7 every day for 9 months until the book was done. And it's almost as if it's not by choice. It's choiceless. I mean, you don't debate, am I going to do this or not do it? It's kind of like brushing your teeth and
yes,
taking a shower.
Yes, absolutely.
I was
working full time. I would get up at 4 a.m., write for an hour and a half, drive an hour to work all day and come home and do that every single morning. And there wasn't even a choice, that I had to do it. But I thoroughly enjoyed the process. It was so enlightening, and felt so wonderful to just make the time to write. As soon as I would push everything else away and make the time, it just wrote itself.
Well, isn't that interesting? And I hear that from a lot of writers, particularly who write about transformation. I believe, and I'm not pushing this necessarily, but I think I said this to you on the phone the other day when we were just talking. You can't write this without knowing about it, yet when you go back and read what you've written or listen to a tape that you might have made, you hear yourself saying or see yourself writing or reread stuff you've written, and it's like stunning. It's like startling. You know, there's a piece of wisdom in it that, you know, it's almost as if you weren't there when it was being written, or you were there when it was being written, but it didn't come from your mind. It was more. And now I'm picking up on one of the holders of the keys, my favorite in the book, and I want to talk about the different characters. But when we came to Keter consciousness, when we came to Rabbi Zimmerman, who spoke about it, and
right.
He said that in this consciousness, you know, we're all one and in harmony, and that's a very familiar sort of thing for people who have, into non-dual realization and that sort of thing. And he goes on to say that, he says a couple other things, but he says, at this level, we are in wholeness and identity with God's wholeness, that this Keter consciousness is the link between our mind and life and our direct communication with God. I don't believe you can write this, and I'm comfortable saying this, I don't believe you can write this book without a great deal of it being direct communication with God.
Oh, it's so funny. When I had several editors go through it, and the first editor had the worst job, of course, because that was the roughest draft.
Yeah.
But she always said, as she was reading through it, when I would get the chapters back, the key chapters had the fewest changes, even down to spelling mistakes, because I thoroughly believe that that was not my human mind writing those.
Well, you know, please don't take this unkindly. I told you I'm never unkind to my guests, and I love the book, and I will encourage everyone to pick it up. But as I began reading it, and I was a publisher and editor for years, so please don't take this too tough. You've been through this process. I don't want to dig up any old wounds here. But as I began to read it, I thought, you know, this isn't the best writer I've ever read in terms of the story, and the paradigm is awesome. Mm-hmm. But as a writer, I said, this isn't the best writer. The story's so compelling. But I'm just affirming what your editor said to you. When you would come to the places where the characters in the book began to talk about the symbol and what the symbol meant, and to talk about the key, the whole writing style shifted.
Yes.
It just was smooth as silk and just flowed. The grammar was perfect. You know, it just took on a whole different flavor to me, and I hope you'll take that kindly.
It's fine. I'm actually a brand new writer. I've never written anything like this before, so this is I ask myself repeatedly why it was kind of like Jake Jenkins in the book. Why did the angel choose him?
Yeah.
And I feel like that sometimes, yeah, because I'm not a writer by trade.
Well,
but,
I think one of the beautiful things you did in developing the characters who presented the eight keys, you really consciously not pick them from very different genres, from very, very different places in life and very different socioeconomic or educational backgrounds, from scientist to a rabbi to a lumberjack out in the woods, you know.
Right, exactly. I really wanted people to see themselves in some character in this book.
Yeah,
and I certainly couldn't bridge them all.
Yeah.
But I wanted people to relate, and the characters really honestly developed themselves. I felt like an instrument most of the time. I just had to do the work and make the time, and I knew immediately if I wrote a line that was out of character, and that's not something Jack would say, or that's not something.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how that comes? Yeah.
Yeah.
I found myself doing that same thing, Chris, writing, and it when it occurs to you when you're writing that, to me, it was a revelation. It really came powerfully that I had a character do something. And what I did, and I don't know if this ever occurred to you, I hadn't realized in the writing that I was really using the personality type, if you will, of friends of mine or people I had known in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one character who did something, and I said, a friend of mine named Greg, and this character had a different name, and I hadn't really thought of that I was writing as this person after the personality of Greg. It hadn't occurred to me consciously, but I had him do something, and as soon as he did, I said, wait a minute, Greg would never do that. And boy, that was just a light bulb for me, and
uh-huh,
it really helped me, because then I began to use my character's parallel personalities to people I knew,
mm-hmm,
and knew well, and that way I could keep them in character.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even taught writing classes along that line, how to keep your characters in character.
Well, it was very enlightening to me, and I, like you said, I still go back and read parts of it,
yeah,
and I'm astounded at what I wrote.
You know, and I understand that so well. I was a preacher for 7 years, and I would listen to tapes the next day of preaching, and I would hear certain parts of it, and I'd go, well, that was really good. And it, for someone might hear that, they think, God, that's pretty egoistic. But it's really not, because you do feel very much like a channel is a little too cosmic for you. But you do feel as if you've tapped into some wisdom that's beyond your ken. That is, it's not the way you would express it even, and it brings in insights that are startling. And it's neat that to talk to someone who's had that same kind of experience, because it's wonderful, you know, because you do get to have your name on the book. You know?
It's actually very humbling, I think.
Well, it is. That's a perfect word. And that's just an absolutely perfect word. It is. I know that for many of the authors I've talked to, they say, you know, I sit here and say, wow, I got to do this. I received this gift. How did I get this? You know,
that's
of all people.
Exactly
so that part of it. Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, isn't it?
You know, the seventh key is gratitude, and I thoroughly, thoroughly feel that one. I believe that's, you know, one of the keys to happiness as well is to really be in gratitude. And so I feel like that continually. I just look at the book and I get overwhelmed with gratitude.
Well, you know, and it's like the book came and got you. And also gratitude came and got you so often, and I don't want to pick on the whole Christian thing, because I think the second coming of Christ is, I believe, let me preface it in real, real boldly. I believe the contemporary church, for the most part, is a train wreck of what the Master Jesus was teaching. He was a beautiful, enlightened teacher. And the second coming of Christ, consciousness works. The second coming of Christ literally, unfortunately, makes a fundamentalist warmongers, you know. I don't incite too much here.
Right.
But the my point is that, like, gratitude and for being the vessel, if you will, or the vehicle that wrote the book, but just gratitude for having the insights for these things. You know, it's not the way the church teaches it. It's like a prescription. This is how you have to behave in order to have these things come in your life. But it's really a description of what happens when they come and get you. I don't believe we can get up one morning as an ingrate and say, all right, that's it. I'm going to be grateful for the rest of my life. We just don't do that. That's a transformation of consciousness in itself. That comes and gets you and suddenly changes your heart and makes you a grateful person. It may be as a result of, you know, my teacher said effort precedes grace. And I think it was just a beautiful line that the effort you put in, that you were responsive to the calling, if you will, to write the book, brings you an incredible measure of grace, because you get to open the book and you get to be on shows and say, wow, I have this metaphor for the 100th monkey phenomenon, writing about the 100th human. All those feelings, my point is that they come and get you, and they're part of the growing toward critical mass. Now you opened up, you said earlier, Chris, you used the phrase, in the not too distant future.
Yes.
Which is, well, now I'm going to pin you down on that. How close are we to the 100th human?
Well, that's the 100th human, the shift to shift in consciousness. When will that take place?
Yeah.
In any moment.
Oh, that's a very good political answer. That's good.
Well, it really, I mean, the future is unwritten, so we can only choose what right now. We can choose to be happy right now. We can choose the right consciousness right now. We can choose to live on purpose and to embrace the silence. We can, all of the things in the book are all things that people can do in any moment. They don't require any special training. They don't require anything really except a choice in each moment. And I really believe that that's key. Any of the procrastinators talking about the future and prognostications about when that will happen. And of course, this book is built on the premise of the end of the Mayan calendar in 2012. And that was a wonderful opportunity to write the book. And I think, do I think the Mayans had something there? Possibly.
Maybe. Okay. Well, so your phrase, not too distant future, was an optimistic one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a consummate optimist.
Good.
And I believe always in looking at the bright side and looking at what can happen.
Well, I believe people who look at the dark side and you call them on it and they say, I'm only being realistic. I always say, why is it more realistic to be pessimistic than it is to be optimistic?
Yeah, no.
You know, it's not more realistic. It's pessimistic. I'm with you. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool optimist. I enjoy my life. I live a beautiful life. I want to come back to what you said, Chris, about choices. Aren't we already in some... I believe that we are on... You know, I teach a meditation called the Mystic Heart Meditation, and I talk about the mystic path on my show a lot, and that I look for writers who are travelers and seekers and finders along the mystic path. Don't you believe that even to make those choices that you're speaking of, that before we even do that, we are already on that path. We have already chosen to step out in some journey. I don't believe we just are in a level of consciousness where we just are pessimistic and not grateful and trudging through life and complaining all the time, where we read a book and say, okay, well, no, you know what, I'm going to be grateful and I'm going to choose to really enjoy this moment. I believe those are sustenance along the path, that people that will read your book, even pick up your book, or when your book jumps off the shelf at them in the bookstore, are people who have already been, I want to be careful about the word chosen because that's got a heavy sort of thing, but people who are already on the mystic path, people who are already in the parade, if you will, who are already part of that movement toward the quantum leap, toward the shift in consciousness.
I believe that the amount of people, the percentage of human beings on the planet that are working, literally working towards a shift in consciousness for this planet is astounding. I don't think anything like that has been done in the universe for some time. I mean, I certainly am not an expert on universal consciousness, but that is my personal sense, that there are many people, and a percentage I think is very high. However, I also think that we have a very prominent force that we are working against or trying to incorporate and turn, and it's a habit of thinking on this planet. It's simply a habit. It's not dark, it's just a habit, and it's not healthy, and it's not going to help us.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a socialization, in the terms that I've used, Chris, in the past, that each generation comes in and we're socialized, socially coerced, I would say. Not, as you said, not through some grand conspiracy or through any evil intent. It's just, it's the way society has evolved, and in order to be civil, you do this. And I tell my son, who's 25, I said, each generation in turn screws up their kids, you know.
And right.
We do the best
insanity
we can.
Insanity comes from your children, right?
Yeah. And the powers of good and evil, it's a good metaphor for it. I don't know if it's necessarily evil, as, you know, evil is ignorance, is not knowing. I mean, you use the fraternity of the what is it, Bene Victus?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That purposely, well, these are the money hoarders, the power mongers who say, no, we can't have true democracy. I mean, democracy is equal sharing, you know, that we can't have that, or we lose all our power and control. Right. You know, here we live on a planet that's abundant in every way, and people are starving, and the gap between, in America, the gap between, you know, the middle class is evaporating. There are people who are poor and there are people who are wealthy, and it just keeps moving away. So you see that, and I think what's equally happening, to paraphrase what you're saying, Chris, is that there's a gathering of those of us who are saying, wait a minute, there's a transformation. We've had a foretaste of it. We're getting that information. We're coming upon that. We're picking up books like The 100th Human. We're just hearing things and seeing things, and we're coming across BBS Radio, where there are 70 hosts,
Don
and Doug Newsom, who put this together, said, this is definitely not mainstream. This is about a transformation of consciousness, that more and more and more people, whether the numbers are greater or it's just an improvement in communications around the world, but either way, it's kind of like, whether, is it a gradual or a one leap?
Oh, it's definitely, I mean, I don't know what the ratio is to population growth versus people who are shifting their consciousness, but it's definitely a wonderful time to be involved in this type of work. And, I mean, to have books out there that do go mainstream, that hit bestsellers like Celestine Prophecy and The Alchemist, mm-hmm. to have movies that are hitting the big screen, like The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful works that people are watching and reading. And these are not people who would traditionally be seekers per se.
Right.
But
no, I agree with you. I was in a corporate setting recently, Chris, and someone was presenting about how to clear clutter out of your life and improve emotionally, and very, very conservative, middle of the road, and this was to a law enforcement group of about 60 people, and right in the midst of it, he used the term, well, you know, in the morning when you're kind of quiet and it's easier to tune into your super consciousness, blah, 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 and there wasn't even a ripple.
Right.
And a little later, he talked about, well, you know, that's the way the laws of the universe go. And I heard the little, yeah, nod all through. And so, even
well, it's going
amazing?
On in schools. They're teaching meditation and mindfulness in public school systems, every place where they can get away with it.
Well, now, you're near Philadelphia?
Pardon me?
You're fairly near Philadelphia, or you're?
I'm near Philadelphia, about an hour and a half away from there.
A very good friend of mine named Bob Rose, who is president of the Meditation Society of America.
Mm-hmm.
Has spent the last 15, 18 years really promoting meditation in the schools. I mean, he's one of the really verbal voices,
one of the
loud voices out. And you might check that out sometime. You'll find it on the web, Meditation Society of America.
Okay, I will. And I actually work with mindfulyoga.com, which is a wellness program that goes in the school system here,
mm-hmm.
and they teach emotional intelligence and meditation and all of those things right in the school district here.
It's called mindfulyoga.com?
Yes, mindfulyoga.com. A wonderful group.
Those who just tuned in, I want to just, because sometimes people, this is on the internet and people kind of come through and come back and forth. Our guest today on Sundays with Papa Jeff is Chris Fenwick. She's the author, this is her first book, of The 100th Human. It's a novel, a fiction. And I just wonder if, and it's available on Amazon.com. It's available, Barnes & Noble through sunburypress.com. That's sunbury.com. And Chris has a website, that talks about the book and introduces the book. And it's a beautiful website. It's worth going to the website. That's at www.the100th, that's 100th, the100human.com. And just to increase your passion for picking up this book, I want to read the back introduction on the book. It's just simple title, says Fiction, and it says December 2012, the final day of the 5,000-year-old Mayan calendar nears. The world is in turmoil as wars and international tensions continue. People everywhere seem lost in the complications of day-to-day struggles, poverty, misfortune, anger, and greed. A small team of scientists have uncovered a riddle concerning the, quote, end of days. As they reveal the symbolic meaning of the riddle, their serendipitous journey is discovered by the fraternity of the Vene Victus, determined to thwart such revelations. These two powers, of good and evil, converge. Only the spirits of the ancients know the outcome. The 100th Human is a spiritual quest, delving deeply into matters of physics, metaphysics, evolution, and the human condition. Join Jack, Apu, and Alana as they race against time, searching for those who can assist in revealing the mystery of the ancient symbols before time literally runs out. That's a wonderful back cover, Chris.
Thank you. I've had lots of people read the book that it's so fun to get feedback on the book, and interesting how different people come with different keys to me, and they'll say, wow, I just really identified with that first key and living on purpose. Or somebody will say, like you liked the
Rabbi,
yes, the fifth key, the correct identification key, I think.
Key to consciousness, yes.
Yes, key to consciousness. And I just, it's so fun to hear people, they'll say, oh, I didn't really relate to the others, but I just really, and it all depends on where they are in their path.
Sure.
And I've also had people not talk about the keys at all and just say, wow, that was a really gripping story. It was fun to read. I couldn't put it down. And so it just all depends on where people are when they read it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something as an author, especially a first-time author, is something I'm learning to just release the book to be whatever it needs to be to whoever reads it.
And do you have any plans consciously for another book?
I think there is another book in me. I wouldn't have said I would have been a writer, but I thoroughly enjoyed the process, And but right now I'm committed to getting this book out into the hands of the people. So
good.
I'm just concentrating on this one right now.
And when did this is out fairly recently?
Yes, just 2 months ago.
Just 2 months. Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. Well, you had some good promoters. I'm not sure how I came across, but do you have a publicist who might have contacted me or?
No. Yeah. I don't remember how.
Well,
how you heard of it?
I don't either, but I know I did.
But I'm certainly glad.
Yeah. Well, me too. I just enjoyed it so much, and it's neat. Want to talk a little bit about the keys, because I love that. I'm on your email list now, so I just got the fourth key. You send a series of the keys and talk about them a little bit. You want to just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. The fifth key is coming out this week, the correct identification. The first key was living on purpose, and that's all about finding your reason for being here. And I believe that is so important, especially as a mother. In my own life, I've always looked for those threads of opportunity that really struck a chord in me that meant that I was doing what I was here to do. And I think writing this book was certainly one of those.
And that's
but
a question
a mother,
that we all have so often in our lives. You know, what am
right.
I here for? What's my purpose? Sure.
Sure. And but there, I've done lots of things that did not really, you know, feed me in that way. So as a mother, I really encourage that of my children to find that that thing that you are here to do, and that takes some time to discover that. It's not everybody knows when they're born. And I think that I feel very passionate about finding your specific gift and contributing that. And I think that should be taught in schools even more
absolutely.
Than reading. Well,
I believe that absolutely with you, Chris. I believe that we won a race to get here. We outran millions of sperm, and we won. You know, so
right.
We're here. I love you. We're here. We're alive, and I believe that each individual human being has something very special and unique, just as we are all unique, that only they can bring to this world.
Right.
And finding that is an immense and incredibly humbling gift to find that, to know that as you've come to, as I, by grace of God, have come to know that. Sharing this potential for human consciousness to evolve to a next level of peace and love and joy and a new way to relate to human beings as one human family, to know that, to have tasted that, to receive the taste of that. For me, Chris, the day before that came to me, and I had, I know there are people who have come gradually and can't pin it down, I had a thunderbolt shift on July 21st, 1975, about 9:30 in the morning. That, to be somewhat specific, that
that's wonderful.
That absolutely changed me. Just it was an experience of keto consciousness. It was just kaboom, direct communication with God, just coming into the very presence and residence of God. It just changed everything in my life. I had come in despair. I had come saying, God, let me die. I just had so much regret for things that have happened in my life and things that I've done, and I just want to die. And I did in a way that I didn't know you could do, and came into a new life in a way that I didn't know you could. But as I came to that, I said, God, if you can give me peace of mind, if you can somehow relieve this, and I don't know how it's possible, this burden I carry, if you can do that, I will spend the rest of my life sharing that possibility with others, that no matter where we are in life, no matter how far we feel removed from who we are or our purpose in life or what despair or just this frustrating intuitive kind of stirring of like, what am I missing? Isn't there something more? There is an answer to that. We can know that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And my purpose in this lifetime is to find people like you and bring you on a radio show, to write books, to preach, to do whatever I can to be a witness to that there is a coming shift in consciousness, and there are many people who have made the shift who are finders along the path, who are like a Chris Fenwick, who are compelled in a joyful and humbling way to reach back and say, if you're looking for answers, if you're looking for keys to life, if you're somehow drawn to hear and read about an upcoming transformation, well, guess what? Your curiosity means you're already part of it, and here's something for you to read. Here's a delightful book called The 100th Human.
Thank you, and I totally agree, and I I encourage that so much in everybody that I meet. And
so that's the first key.
And the book is part of that.
Yeah.
The second key goes on to, hearing the silence, and I believe that the silence is the doorway to knowing your purpose and to happiness and the finding that you were talking about versus just the seeking.
It came within meditation.
Yes.
And Bob Rose would, if he's listening, and he does quite often, is applauding what you just said. And all long-term meditators are applauding that there is I use the term wisdom whisper. There is a hearing in the silence that brings us a startling rush of wisdom that brings us something we cannot think or imagine. It just comes right from the heart, and it's just a new understanding.
Well, there recently.
I hope you don't mind me jumping into a
No,
term.
No, no, not okay. at all. I recently heard it described as the difference between your life situation and life. Well, your life is much different than your life situation, and your life is not in all your circumstances.
Right.
And I think I find that in meditation and in the silence.
Sure. The Bible speaks of that even to refer to that, because there's some great wisdom in this, some great teaching, that we can rise above the circumstances, and that's what that's all about. You're finding your life rather than than identifying with your life circumstance.
Exactly.
And that's the second
third key.
The
there's so much science in the book, and that's one of my pastimes of studying physics and how it relates to metaphysics, and I think that comes out pretty clearly in the book. Infinite possibilities and the new science, the quantum physics that's happening now, is so exciting to me. And to watch mainstream science talk about things that are just infinite possibilities available, and how we're so interconnected to everything else, and how all of the things that we take for as real and solid are not.
Sure.
And that we are not only part of, but influence everything around us.
Well, as science keeps splitting the atom and getting smaller and smaller and down to quark, and now when they find matter in the quark, they're calling it love.
Isn't that wonderful?
Interesting scientific term.
Yes.
And in quantum physics, and I don't profess to know a whole lot about quantum physics, but there's a point in quantum physics called a magnetic moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, it's element shift from positive to negative. There's a polarity shift that happens in a magnetic moment. I mean, how parallel to that is that to the transformation in consciousness?
That's wonderful. I mean, it's so perfect the way it's paralleling, and very exciting to me. And I like the idea of thinking of infinite possibilities are out there. And all you have to do is release all your expectations, all your past, all the things that you thought.
That's all easy as that, huh?
It's very simple, actually. If you stay right centered right now,
yes.
The past is gone. That's, that's behind the boat. And
Have you come across Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now?
I love The Power of Now. It's wonderful, wonderful piece.
Yeah, he does it really well, doesn't he?
Yes, wonderful.
And speaking of parallels, Chris, when you mentioned parallels, one of the things that I've found in talking about the science and metaphysics, physics and metaphysics are beginning to find each other on new levels. What I've found is when you are in that beautiful consciousness, when you are just in the now, in the present moment, a silly little love song will have profound significance that is saying the same thing. Like, and the grocery store clerk will say something, it's just everywhere, and it's a matter of us attuning to it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's so part of us.
Yeah.
I think we've had to work hard to ignore it.
That's what when I talk about social coercion, we were coerced out of it. The model I use is that we became so rationally oriented, so linear in our thinking, that we identify with that, and we have let an intuitive side just atrophy to the point where we don't tune into it. And what I teach are ways to, what I teach something called an experience of pure intuitive consciousness. And what I'm saying is we have an intuition, we have a heart knowing that we can go in and take to the gym and work out and muscle up to the point where, boom, we will come into balance and we will come into that place of knowing and transformation.
It does take a certain amount of work to get past the programming.
Absolutely.
You have to take the time to get into that place where you can hear.
Yeah, and
I teach my kids that you can't think you're going to mix in the world every day, the school and work, and not be influenced by that. You have to take your time away from that and set your intentions and set your your whole consciousness for that day.
Well, that, I think that's a wonderful point. I wish you'd repeat that, because that's just right. I just think people need to hear that so much. It just can't be a casual sort of encounter. If that stirring is going on that's brought you to that point that you're even considering it, back to you.
Yes, oh, for sure. And I know in my own life, if I go a day, 2-3 days, I have my personal my habits of getting up, and I do my walk in the morning, and I set the tone of my day, and I connect to my source, and then I do my meditation. If I don't do that for a couple of days straight, I will be overcome with the feelings of hopelessness that the world is surrounded in.
The cares of the world. The parable of the sower is great about that, because it talks about if we don't come to the understanding, we won't do it. Ramana Maharshi, a revered teacher, said that aspirant seekers meditate to attain this consciousness, and that awakened, those who have attained the consciousness, meditate to maintain.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very powerful lesson, that there are people who can get a taste of it and move on, and I speak from life experience, and suffer for that because they didn't put the effort in to maintain. Or I know we hate words like effort and discipline, but, you know, sometimes they're very, very good. And I like my teacher who says effort precedes grace, and said, I'm affirming what you're saying, that we need that daily reminder. I mean, I have, and my wife has, we have little altars at home where we have different teachers on the altar, and it's just every day we do yoga and meditation. And as you said, if you get caught up in your time crunch is there and you don't attend to it, in a matter of days, you'll find yourself being a little more easily frustrated, a little less tolerant with someone.
Exactly.
And so returning to that is so critical to maintain that and stay in that place, because when you are in that centered place and that balanced place and that place of harmony, there's just unconditional love. There's just this feeling of, a burly truck driver pulls up beside you in a pickup at the stoplight and snarls at you, "What are you looking at?" You know, I tell people, tell them, "You, because you're so beautiful."
Right.
Just staying in that place is a really good point.
Yes.
Okay.
And it takes effort. And if the world wasn't the way it was, perhaps it wouldn't take the effort that it does. But it is, and we're here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I put in the effort because I don't like the alternative.
good. Yeah. And the good point. Okay. So, the third key is silence and science.
Yes. The third is the infinite possibilities. The fourth one, of course, is my favorite character in the book, Jake Jenkins,
the
tow truck driver from the Mountains of Color.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved that character and was so excited when he came onto the page. It just was so much fun. And his message is that we are all, we're one. We're not only are we related, but we're made of the same stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Physically and emotionally, and everything about us is so interconnected and interwoven that you really can't extract yourself from one another. And so in light of that, how can you not love your neighbor, or how can you kill your neighbor?
Well, it's the allegory of the Garden of Eden, you know, when we had direct communion with God, and he said, here's the tree of life, enjoy that, and live in this beautiful consciousness. Here's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't decide this is bad and this is good. Don't be open to those judgments about anything, because once you go there, you're going to lose the connection. And that feeling of separation is what, as you and I were talking earlier, is what happens. I use the term social coercion, is when each generation begins to teach, well, you need to, in order to be civilized, you need to sit in your seat all day and don't be a bad boy or a bad girl, and they move us from this feeling of benevolence to this feeling of we have to be tense and think all the time, and we begin to lose our wholeness and our connection to God.
As soon as we start to find ways to define us then in terms of this world, then we're separating ourselves from each other. You have red hair, I have black hair, you're yellow, I'm white, all of those judgments and discernments separate us.
Yes.
When we're really, those are life circumstance. That is not life.
Right.
And in life, we're all connected. And
that's a realization. There's a growing community of called non-dualists, non-dual realization. That it's just, again, and that comes and gets you. It's one, you know, different people I talk to about it, and a lot of people I communicate with on the internet who say that just one day watching the sunrise, it was like, wait a minute. It just hits them, and they see the harmony, and everything falls into place, and life goes on. But they have a whole different sense of being in this world that they're not seeking anymore. They realize that we're one, and it just makes life so much more beautiful.
And I believe wholeheartedly that that is the only way to peace in our world, is through that connection.
Yes.
To take up sides is only going to perpetuate the strife and the wars and the things that we struggle with.
It is the genesis of war. Anytime we see a separation, that's the genesis of war. They're the infidels, and we're the only ones who God loves. You know, it's just so crazy.
Yes,
the craziness
of the
fundamentals.
It amazes me. I think it's still the Hatfield McCoys.
Yeah.
It's almost comical if it weren't tragic.
Exactly.
Yeah. Of course, the next key is the correct identification or Keter consciousness, and I just think that that's, again, it all goes back to the same thing and being connected to Source. But to identify yourself as not as a human being, what is it that Wayne always says, Wayne Dyer always says in his tapes and his books, that we're God having a human experience, not humans having a God experience. And I think that really... taking, you're not who you are, you're not what you look like, you're not what you do in your job, which is very prevalent in this society.
What do you do?
You know, you're not what family you were born into. You're not any of those things. You're, you know, something much greater than that, and it's, we're made in the image of God. And that key took me the longest time. I knew the keys before I wrote the book. I knew what each one of these were. I did not know how they would translate onto the page. I didn't know what symbols would come to me to demonstrate the keys. I knew what the keys were, that's all. And so when I found in the Kabbalah the Keter consciousness and that whole series in there, I was so blessed. I felt like I was learning so much. And I still, when I go back, and I just actually read that yesterday again, that one chapter. And
that's the one that struck me, as I told you earlier.
That's so amazing. That's so cool.
And the rabbi said that key is the link between our mind and direct communication with God. I love that. I love the way you wrote that. Just perfect. Just jump right off the page, Emmy.
Thank you. Of course, the next one is freedom. I like to say freedom equals no fear. It has nothing to do with national freedom or any of the other kinds of freedom from slavery. They're all connected, of course, but it means you're not afraid.
And it's so many people I've had on, and I could just break right into the whole show, and I don't want to do that, but no fear, it's so hard to explain, and it's what an awesome place to be, isn't it, Chris? I mean, to be able to find that key, to live fearlessly, to live without fear. It changes the complexion of life entirely.
Yeah.
It is incredible freedom. Let's go on to the seventh and eighth so we don't run out of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. The seventh is the gratitude's gift of happiness is what I call it. And it's just that gratitude is a state of being, and that it's actually a doorway into Keter consciousness or Christ consciousness or higher consciousness or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. That it actually is not, like you said, a decision you make, but it's a it's a state of mind,
a gift of happiness. I like that.
Yes. And of course, the final one is love and light, and it's the transcendence that happens in those, and that's where the shift happens.
You know, I've found, Chris, and I've taught this in my classes of the love and light, that because we talked earlier about you can make some conscious decisions right now to begin to practice some of these things, to put them in your life, to just feel them. And again, I say that you wouldn't do it unless you were drawn into this path, into this understanding, unless you were already in the parade. But I teach people to move into a place called Loving Awareness. And what I tell them to do is, like, in the middle of a shopping experience at a grocery store, just begin to look at everyone there, because we're all one, with love and light, and send them love and send them light, and just feel that for everyone unconditionally, and look at other people and realize that person that you've never spoken to in your life, who might have kind of a scowl on their face or some determined look, and you might be too quick to judge, but if you will stop, and even the meanest looking person in the place has this heart. They have had tender moments and times in their life when they have exhibited the most extreme tenderness and kindness and compassion. And if you can know that and connect with them, I do that, and it sets my day up. It just changes me. I find a smile pasted on for the day. You know, it just changed my heart. It just moves me in a whole different place to go move consciously into that loving awareness. I do it at traffic stops. You know, teenagers pull up beside me, and they're, you know, the bass is rattling the speakers in my car without the radio on. You know, it's so loud. I just send them, say, these are sweet kids. There's love in their heart. They're beautiful human beings. They're my brothers and sisters, and it just changes my day.
I totally agree. It's a challenge sometimes.
Oh, it is. Oh, well, yeah.
But I fully agree. And the moment in the book where there's the equal reciprocating of not only love but respect to each other, and that I felt that so deeply, that the bowing down to each one is just so indicative of the state of consciousness that they were at, because I'm recognizing in you the source that I have in me, namaste. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer than that.
Well, you know, I really like, Chris, that you do in your correspondence, that you start off your correspondence on email with "Dear Enlightened One." That really caught me. Ego doesn't die. It moves out of the way for a while, but then it comes back in. But it's delighted to find enlightened consciousness. And yet, when I opened an email from you and it started off "Dear Enlightened One," that was just that just blessed me. That just felt so good. Isn't that what a wonderful way to start off with that respect, with that namaste? And even thank you for autographing the book, by the way, that you started with namaste, recognizing, you know, the presence of God in me as in you, and in our consciousness of that. So.
Absolutely. And it's so, I think that's an attitude of respect and love to each individual that's what I'm working on. And I, as I said in the beginning, all of these keys are things that I am working on, and I feel like it's a gem that is being revealed to me one facet at a time, and just each new thing I learn is just as beautiful and sparkling as the last, and it's a wonderful adventure.
Well, your last comments remind me, and we'll close up with this, a preacher years ago was talking about some scripture and this is in the final book of Revelation, and it says that the angels in heaven sing holy, holy, holy repeatedly 24 hours a day. And he said, and his take on it was really beautiful. He said, what happens is they sing holy, 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 and every time they sing that, God reveals more to them. And so they sing holy, holy, holy again, and it just goes on forever.
Gives me chills.
Good. I was hoping. That's perfect. I was hoping. Isn't that great? I love that, too. I thought you would after what you just said, that it's like a gem, and that made me think of that. So,
that's wonderful.
Chris, I'm delighted with your book and delighted to have a chance to talk to you. I hope we have an opportunity to correspond, and I love encouraging authors. I will do my part to help you promote this book, and I will be promoting it on different avenues that open up to me. And appreciate
wonderful.
You coming
thank
on
you
the
so
show
much.
So much. You know, I've really enjoyed talking as much as I did reading the book, Chris.
Well, thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed being and on the show and talking with you, Jeff, and it's been a pleasure and a delight. So appreciate it.
Wonderful. Namaste.
Namaste.
All right. Well, we're coming down to the wire. I know in each show I promise you that I will do a quick or at least a quick wrap-up of the Mystic Heart Meditation. So if you're a first-time listener, each week we talk about the Mystic Heart Meditation. It's a very simple process. I'm going to move kind of quickly today. It starts with quiet awareness, and that's simply what it sounds like. It asks you to just stop what you're doing for just this moment and just be quietly aware. Just be aware of your physical surroundings, where you are, where you're sitting, where you're standing, where you're driving. In fact, you're listening to this show on the internet. Just be quietly aware. Just let your mind go quiet. And now your mind doesn't stay quiet for long because narration starts coming in. And a way to sustain that quiet awareness is to begin to tune into your breath. So the second step is breath awareness. So it's quiet awareness to breath awareness. And breath awareness is simply being aware of your breathing. Notice when you inhale and notice when you exhale. And begin to focus your attention there. Overlap the quiet awareness with breath awareness. So we've got the QA, BA. The third step is heart awareness. Now this takes some time and I'm moving quickly into it. Use the quiet awareness and the breath awareness to just enter a peaceful relaxation, and you'll find that over time you can do that within seconds. You'll feel your body just kind of shift into a quieter place, and you'll feel stress reduce. It's a great, simple, effective stress management technique. Heart awareness is listening for a wisdom whisper, listening for some wisdom that resides in your heart right now that you may not have tuned into with a conscious mind. But if you'll open up to that in that quiet awareness, simply following your breathing in that quiet meditative state, there'll come a time where your heart will speak to you. And there are many of you who know that already, and you love to hear the affirmation of it. And I know that I always have an audience of people who are enlightened, who know that, who have awakened, who love to hear that. Those who may have tasted it and are looking for it again, and those who are earlier on their path. Thanks so much for tuning in to Sundays with Papa Jeff. Always love to know that you're nearby, and I'm really delighted with my guest today. Thank you so much, Chris, for being on. And namaste. Until next time.